Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Veg Grower Podcast. My name is Richard and I want to encourage and inspire you to grow more of your own food. And I do this by sharing exactly what I'm doing in my own allotment and my own garden. Yes, I've created my own lean, mean food producing machines in these two areas. Now, coming up this week, it is time to start making a bit more space in my greenhouse. It's getting a little bit crowded in there, and I want to start actually growing tomatoes and things like that in my greenhouse. I've also planted out some of my cabbages and cauliflowers down on the allotment. Chef Scott has an absolutely delicious rhubarb barbecue sauce recipe, and we've cut the grass for the first cut of the season down on the allotment. So without much ado, let's head on out to the greenhouse and get started. Now, I'm sure if you're like me, your windowsills are full of young seedlings, your greenhouse is absolutely full of other seedlings, and you're looking for ways to try and make some space. Certainly in my case, my windowsills are completely full. Wife, I have to say, has been very, very patient with me. It's very, very good of her. But my greenhouse is also just as full. And one of the things that I have a greenhouse for is, of course, for growing food. Now, one example of this, we have tomato plants in here. I would like to actually get tomatoes in the actual beds, but I'm struggling to be able to find the space to do that. I, of course, have my peach tree and my lemon tree in here as well, which are still a little bit too cold for them to go outside overnight. But it would be good to start trying to get some of these plants outside during the day and bring them back in at night in order to start using some of the beds. That is why we have a greenhouse. We want some early growth. We want to grow food in here and get them growing early. So this brings me to what we have outside the greenhouse, which is my cold frames. Now, in the past, I used to have a couple of cold frames, one that comes up about a metre and a half, and one that was down on the deck. The tall one, unfortunately, did fall apart, and I never got round to replacing it. And I've got one that is down here on the ground. It is missing the top, but we put over some fleece to hold in the temperature there. Now, cold frames for me are a great answer for this time of year. There's somewhere where our plants can still be protected and maintain a good temperature, just like in the greenhouse, but frees up a bit more space in the greenhouse for growing stuff. One of the other advantages I have when I use a cold frame as well is the whole hardening off process. As I said, my trees, I want those to start coming out during the day and go in at night. But if we do that with all our other young seedlings, and many gardeners do this, they spend ages every day moving plants out in the morning and back in at night. For me, that just seems the wrong way to go about things. What I prefer to do is I place them in a cold frame, and instead of moving the plants back in and out all the time, I just open and close, for example, the lid on this greenhouse that is down on the ground. That way it gets exposed to outdoor temperatures during the day, but at night it is closed down and maintains a bit of a warmer temperature and protects the young plants on the inside. At this time of year, it's time to start putting this into action. So from my greenhouse, I've moved some spinach, some onions, some rhubarb and some asparagus out to this cold frame, and we will just start getting that used to being outside a little bit more. Now, hardening off, I think, is quite an important process. When we have our plants inside a greenhouse, they're mollycoddled, they're used to the warmth, they don't really get the wind, which just blows as soon as I said that. They don't get used to being blown around by the wind when they're inside a greenhouse. So it is kind of important to start getting them used to outdoor conditions. And that's, as I said, a cold frame really does come into it. Now, as I said, I'm looking at replacing my cold frames. I want some decent ones. I've got an area just outside my greenhouse, which we've tidied up this weekend. It's paved. It's solid stone base. So it'd be ideal for getting our plants outside. The cold frame we do have, that's perfectly suitable, but it would be good to have some more of these 1.5 metre tall ones at the back. And that's something we're looking at over the next week. I personally, I'm not a fan of the type of cold frames, or grow houses as they're also called, that basically you make a frame, they're like slotting into each other, like putting together a tent, and then you slide over this plastic cover. They're usually the cheaper version. It's like a flexible plastic cover. I'm not a fan of those. I've had a few of those in the past, and what always tends to happen with those is they get blown over in the slightest bit of wind, which is why I prefer my wooden cold frames. They're a bit more money, but they do stand a bit more to the test of time and stand up to strong winds. They're a bit more secure. So in all honesty, I could not bring myself to buy any of these cheap plastic ones anymore. I nearly did, if I'm honest, over this last week, because I want to free up space in the greenhouse, but I thought better of it. As I say, I find them to be a bit of a waste of money. So many people I know have had them blown over and they've lost all their plants. Now, something we tried to use last year was an old bottle fridge. This is a type of fridge I got from work. It's the type you would see behind a bar in a pub or restaurant, used to store in drinks. It's got glass fronted doors, which of course would let in light. It's insulated. And we tried using it last year, but what I discovered, unfortunately, and by it now, is that during the day it just got so hot that there was steam coming out of there when I opened it up at night. It did get a bit too hot. But that might be the answer to it, what I might have to do. And I'm going to start using it again this year now, I've decided, because we do need another cold frame. What I'm going to do is open the doors up during the day. So pretty simple, really. During the night, the doors are closed. During the day, I'll have to prop these doors open. They've got shelves on the inside, which would create nice places to store our plants. And hopefully, it'll be a lot more successful. Now, I'm not going to suggest anybody else does this just yet. As I said, last year, it got a little bit too hot. It might be different this year. We will see. Now, if you have a cold frame, what type of cold frame do you have or do you recommend? Please do share pictures of your cold frame. That'd be great to see. Right, I have got some cabbages and cauliflowers that need to go down to the allotment. So I'm going to head on down there. In the meantime, let's find out what's been going on in the Supporters Club this week. Did you know that the Veg Grower Podcast runs our own Supporters Club? And this club helps keep this podcast running and encourage more people to grow their own food. Members of our club get extra behind-the-scenes podcasts that share a little bit more detail of what's going on here at the Veg Grower Podcast. But not only that, at the beginning of each month, I send out a pack to each of our members. And this pack includes a collection of seeds which can be sown in that very month. Included also in the pack is our monthly mini newspaper, which gives instructions on how to grow the seeds, as well as a tick list of a few other seeds to sow and tasks that can be done in that very month as well. And this is all for the price of just £5 a month. I think it is a great deal. Now, if that is something you would be interested in becoming a member, I would certainly appreciate it. And please do head to theveggrowpodcast.co.uk to find out more. Now, with that, let's get back to the gardening. Well, here I am on the allotment, and I've brought my summer cabbages and my summer cauliflowers down here with me. Summer cabbages and summer cauliflowers I find to be some of the hardest vegetables to grow. And a very good reason for that is that cabbages, cauliflowers and many of the other brassicas are often associated with being winter veg. That tells me that they like being cool. In the middle of summer, it gets a bit too hot for them, but that'll come up a little bit later on. Now, in preparation for planting out these cabbages and cauliflowers, over the last few weeks, I have been hoeing the beds every single day, just trying to make sure that we have no weeds in the bed. Now, trying to beat weeds is an ongoing battle on the allotment, but By hoeing every day, even when it is empty, we do reduce the amount of weeds that we have. Now, over the winter, I actually grew some green manures in the form of field beans in these beds. And I chose field beans because they do like a bit of nitrogen in the soil. Nitrogen encourages leafy growth, which is what we want for our cabbages and our cauliflowers. So pretty much all brassicas for that matter. So by growing field beans, we fixed nitrogen into the soil, which should help produce some decent cabbages, cauliflowers and so on. But we've also been adding a bit of plant feed as well in the form of chicken manure pellets, which is a high nitrogen feed, and blood, fish and bone. Now, blood, fish and bone has caused a bit of a problem, if I'm honest with you. Blood, fish and bone, as the name suggests, made out of blood, fish and bone. And I don't know how they make it, but of course there are some animals out in the wild that might smell it and think there's something buried in the soil. And over this last week, I've noticed a few holes being dug up in my brassicas and my potato bed that maybe foxes, maybe badgers, they've come along, they've smelt the blood, fish and bone and think there's something tasty. They've dug a hole, found nothing and buggered off, leaving the hole, and including digging up some of my potatoes. Luckily, we've managed to pop those back in the ground, but potatoes are starting to grow, which is a good sign. So our cabbages and our cauliflowers, over the last few weeks, plenty of feed added to the soil, but we've also been adding garden lime. Now, garden lime is quite important when it comes to brassicas. What garden lime does is it adjusts the pH to be more suitable for brassicas. Brassicas tend to like a more alkaline soil, so it's very important to get that right. You could try without it, but I find it to be a lot more successful just adding a bit of garden lime to the soil. It doesn't take much, and it's well worth doing. So we've weeded, we've added plenty of nutrients, and we've adjusted the pH. It's all ready for our brassicas to go in. Now, I'm doing our cabbages and our cauliflowers today. In the future, we will, of course, follow this up with our Brussels sprouts, our broccoli, our kale, and many, many others in the brassica family. You get the general idea. So to plant out, what I like to do is just dig a hole a little bit bigger than the root ball of the plant we're planting out. And into that hole, I'm going to add a bit more garden lime and a bit of blood, fish and bone. And then just pop in that plant, backfill it and firm it in well. Brassicas do tend to also like quite a firm soil, so firming it in is quite important. With something like Brussels sprouts, you actually add a stick as well to try and stop the plant from rocking. Now, we repeat this, given about 30 centimetres of space if it's cabbages or cauliflowers. Brussels sprouts like a bit more. It does depend on what varieties and things. Just check your variety for how much space you need to give. But as a general rule of thumb, 30 centimetres of space is about right. And then repeat until all our plants are planted out, which is what we will do. Once they are all planted out, I will then just give these a really good watering in. Now, I've got 18 plants going into this one bed today. So when I water these in after planting them all out, I will be adding 4 watering cans of water across this one bed, which is quite a bit. It's quite a bit, isn't it? But it is so important because it will just ensure there's enough moisture for the roots to start exploring and finding where they go. Now, over this next week, I will have to water this bed on a daily basis. So important that we try and water regularly when we're trying to get our plants to establish. Now, once these plants are planted out and you leave site, there will be one thing that will come along and start eating on these plants: the pigeon. They are hungry, hungry birds, and they can spot fresh leafy growth from a mile off, I swear. And they will literally wait until you've gone, and they will peck your whole load of cabbages in a matter of days. Real, real problem. One of the best things to pot over these is a net, of course, and it could be in a frame or something like that. This just stops your pigeons from being able to get to your plants. They're pretty inexpensive. You can make your own. I'm not a fan of using nets, I'll be honest with you. The reason I don't like having nets is what I find when I apply nets is that they become a barrier for when I need to weed. So what I mean by that, I'm always the type of person, I just want to get on. So if I'm having to lift a net, I then it's a barrier for me just to getting on. So I tend not to try and cover anything with nets anymore. I'm not a fan of them, and it's cheaper. What I'm experimenting with this year is grazers, which does a pigeon and deer repellent. I'm spraying that on, and we'll see if that really works instead. I'm hoping it does instead of nets. As I said, I'm not a fan of nets because they just become a barrier in my way. But what we could also apply, and I've used these in the past, hanging CDs up or some reflective material, tinfoil for example, that just flaps around in the wind and catches the sun, and that can scare off pigeons and things like that as well. And of course there's a scarecrow. We could all make a scarecrow, pop that up. It's something I really should do soon, actually. Something I've wanted to do for a while. Do like a good scarecrow. I think it could be a fun little project. So scaring away the pigeons is probably one of the most important things to do once you've planted out your brassicas. But I can guarantee you will lose some. Just got to live with it. Pigeons for me are the only real problems I get with our brassicas. Some people do get club root and things like that. That's not a problem for me. It's just pigeons eating our plants. But moving away from that and into the future, as I said at the beginning, summer, the heat can cause a problem. It can cause our plants to bolt. So how can we try and stop that? It's all about keeping that plant a little bit cooler. Some people might put up a type of shade cloth, which comes back to the thing I said earlier, a bit of a net, a cover, that just stops the plants from getting too hot. For me, I think it's more about keeping the soil cool and moist at all times. So watering regularly is a must. Plenty of organic matter in the soil in the form of compost does help as well. But what we could also do is mulch the soil. Compost works for mulch if you've got an unlimited supply, but grass clippings are another alternative. So once I've planted these out, what I will do is cut the grass and then cover the beds over with the grass clippings. And that's going to be what I talk about in just a moment. In the meantime, let's find out what Chef Scott has for us this week.
Hi, it's Scott here with this week's recipe. And with all the nice weather we've been having recently, I have been thinking about the first barbecue of the season. And I've just picked some rhubarb, so I thought I would make and share my rhubarb barbecue sauce recipe. It goes great with all things barbecue, especially with pork, and it's lovely dolloped on a burger. It'll last in the fridge for up to a month and freezes very well. So let's not delay and jump into the kitchen and hear how it's made. You can find this recipe and others on the veggrowpodcast.co.uk or on my Instagram page, seedtotable plot 13, along with a supporting video. And for this recipe, you will need 800 grams of rhubarb, 3 peeled cloves of garlic, 45 grams of apple cider vinegar, 350 grams of dark brown sugar, 80 grams of ketchup, 30 grams of Worcester sauce, 15 grams of paprika, 5 grams of ancho chili flakes, or you can use normal chili flakes if you can't find them, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1 teaspoon of allspice, 1 teaspoon of ginger, and 230 grams of water. Method: start by chopping the rhubarb into inch pieces and add to a roasting tray along with the garlic and season with salt, and roast in an oven set at 200 degrees Celsius for 10 minutes or until soft. Then add the rhubarb to a saucepan along with the water and blitz with a stick blender until smooth. Now add the rest of the ingredients to the pan and give it a good mix. Then bring the pan to a boil and reduce to a simmer and simmer for 15 to 20 minutes. Then put it into sterilised jars and that's the recipe done. And that's it from me this week.
Now, over the last few weeks, you have heard me complain about not being able to cut the grass here in the allotment. And the grass has, of course, grown quite long. Now, ideally, if it wasn't for some of our allotment rules, I would actually leave an area of this allotment to have some long grass. What I've noticed before I cut the grass today is that we had lots of ladybirds and other insects that, of course, are going to help look after our plants for us. They're going to hunt the aphids. They're going to hunt the slugs and snails and things like that. But unfortunately, our allotment inspectors may not see it like that when they carry out their inspections. What I mean by that, they'll run along, they'll see long grass and they think it's unlooked after, even if it is just one little area. So as much as I'm against it, cutting the grass is something that we do have to do. I will admit, I quite enjoy cutting the grass, however. So today I brought down my strimmer and my lawnmower. Now I use, as you no doubt aware, battery powered tools. So I made sure my batteries were charged fully last night, and I've brought those down here today and tackled the grass. Now I knew we were not going to be able to do the entire allotment today. Reason being, the grass is so long that our lawnmower is just going to burn through batteries in next to no time. All I did, I started off with the strimmer on the bottom half of the allotment, went round and got the grass down a little bit lower. String strimmer this is, but we did run out of string pretty quickly, which is a little bit annoying, but something we could easily remedy when we get home. I then pulled out the lawnmower and I went round and cut the grass. Grass still being a little bit on the damp side, so it did struggle. One of the advantages of petrol lawnmowers is, of course, it does cut grass better and it can cope with longer grass much better. But I moved over to battery tools a while ago. Haven't looked back. This is the only downside, is when the grass is long, it does become a little bit of a problem. Anyway, cut the grass as well. We went through all the rest of our batteries, but it did give me a huge bucket of grass clippings. Now, these grass clippings are, for me, something that I use a lot of. The obvious thing to do is, of course, add them to our compost heaps and compost them down, which no problem at all with that. We need compost, and it would be great to be able to produce enough compost that we don't need to use grass clippings for what I'm going to recommend. And what I'm going to recommend is we use it for a mulch. So I've taken all those grass clippings and I've placed them around those brassicas, those cabbages and those cauliflowers that I planted out earlier, and I've just covered the soil around the plants with these grass clippings. What that does, it creates a bit of a shade, it'll stop weeds coming through and reduce the amount of water loss through evaporation. Of course, I've watered the soil before we've placed this grass clippings down anyway, so it is pretty damp underneath. Grass clippings, as I said, are easy to come by, and that's one of the advantages, I think, for having grass paths. We get grass clippings that we can use as a mulch or add to our compost bins. Couldn't do that with chip paths, could we, at the end of the day? However, something I do know is that after we have cut the grass here on the allotment just looks so much better for it. We're really here to grow food, I know. An allotment is here for us to grow food, but it needs to be neat and tidy to keep everybody happy as well. And just cutting the grass makes a big difference. I've often found that when people, including myself, have received weed notices, one of the things that we've just had to do is strim and cut the grass areas, and it has tidied it up to the point that the council is happy with it. So don't overlook the grass cutting, is what I'm saying. Right, I'm going to head on home now, and I will meet you back in the podding shed to close up this week. Well, we are approaching the end of this week's podcast, but I do have a few things I just would like to share with you. Firstly, the details for the competition to win a pair of tickets to Gardeners World Live 2024 is up on our website. To enter, all you've got to do is suggest what we can grow in our fourth Belfast sink. Details and conditions on that competition are available at thevegrowerpodcast.co.uk. Now, earlier I mentioned about becoming a member of our supporters club, and that would really help if you can become a member. But you can also help by supporting this podcast by just rating and reviewing on your podcast provider. Now, rating and reviewing really helps us get found by other people who might be interested in growing their own food. And we have actually had quite a few reviews over this last week based on last week's podcast. Firstly, Stuart Jackson on YouTube, who has said, "Always a great podcast, Richard, is always honest about his gardening experience," which is much appreciated, Stuart. I've also had a comment from another user who says their fav compost is Composana from Germany, but he has also discovered hazel and made a gate out of his hazel. And great stuff. Hazel is really versatile. Now, over on Spotify, Lynn also mentions hazel and how she's going to have to buy a hazel tree. And she's also going to give the smashed cucumber recipe a go too. And Anne has also said that last week's information on compost was really useful. And it's a huge cultural shift from the good clean, odour-free compost that we have been used to for years. I have to agree, there is certainly a change, and it's a challenge to get consistently good quality compost that does the job. But we will get there. We certainly will. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. And if you do want to get in touch, then please do feel free to reach out. You can email me, richard@veggrowpodcast.co.uk. You can leave a comment on the bottom of a blog post, or you can even leave a voicemail on our website at theveggrowpodcast.co.uk. We will be back again next time. So until then, please take care.